Welcome to KKRN and Off the Shelf with Mary. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Mitchell, and I'll be sharing some of my favorite old and new nonfiction books about philosophy, spiritual psychology, science, and metaphysics that might offer just the knowledge you've been looking for to enhance your life. Today, we'll look at two books. The first is The Physics of God by Joseph Selby, published in 2018. And the second is The Language of God, A Scientist Presents Evidence for Belief, by Dr. Francis Collins, published in 2006. You know, if you're not a believer in a higher power, I really encourage you to just hang in there, and I'll bet you still find something you didn't know about physics and heaven. So who is Joseph Selby? He's an author that makes the complex and obscure very simple and clear. He teaches yoga and meditation throughout the U.S. and Europe and is known for creating bridges of understanding between modern, evidence-based discoveries of science and the ancient, experience-based discoveries by the mystics. He's a founding member of Ananda, a meditation-based community near Nevada City, California. Selby was always a lover of science, and in college he studied math, physics, microbiology, and chemistry. And then, after he had a transcendent experience that lasted several days, he changed his major to philosophy. He took a deep dive into Western metaphysics and then other world religions and found meditation to be an experiential way of understanding consciousness. While in college, he began studying the science of matter and studying what he called the science of religion, a study in a different language used to describe a different reality. He found the explanations of having a transcendent experience were matched by explanations of material phenomena given by scientists in the field of quantum physics, string theory, and quantum biology. One case he cites is the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Program called the PEAR Program, P-E-A-R, which conducted experiments for 27 years to determine whether individuals could affect material objects without physical contact. They developed a random events generator, REG, and focused on things such as water fountains, cascading steel balls, pendulums, electronic systems, all known to be impervious to all outside influences. Once an REG was determined to have a rock-solid consistency with the objects, hundreds of volunteers were invited to try to alter its rock-solid consistency by their thoughts alone. After almost three decades of experiments and reviewing billions of data points, the results revealed that nearly every volunteer had successfully altered the baseline distribution of the REG. The results were overwhelming with statistical meaning. You know, if you've studied science at all, you've likely heard that physicists have proven thousands of times that energy behaves like a wave in a wave-like manner until it's observed by an intelligent observer. The observer plays a role in the formation of matter. You know, over the last 80 years or so, it's been proven that physical objects do not have an independent objective reality. Physical objects only appear when we observe them, and this has never been disproved. Another hole in scientific materialism is evidence that information can be exchanged from one mind to another. And through the study of quantum physics, we know that all of reality is inseparably interconnected. No object can exist separately from any other. The universe is one gigantic energy field in which our individual consciousness has an impact. John von Neumann, one of the greatest mathematicians in the 20th century, asserted that consciousness doesn't merely affect reality. Consciousness creates reality. Now, if you think that's crazy, it's time to catch up on the latest scientific discoveries. Selby studied saints and sages who had transcendent experiences and found that they all used different variations of two practices. stillness, and inner absorption. The core disciplines of today's what we call meditation and yoga. And in the Bible, Luke 17, 20 and 21 says the kingdom of God does not arrive when we are looking for it, nor do they say, here it is or there it is. Behold, you have the kingdom of God within you. Selby writes that the primary difference between the science of religion and the science of matter is in the discovery process. The science of matter's view of reality is based on the repeatable and consistent findings of physical experiments. The science of religion's view of reality is based on the repeatable and consistent findings of transcendent experiences. Extraordinary or beyond human experience, such as hearing the voice of God or having an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience. As I once mentioned in another program, I personally had an out-of-body experience one morning when I was eating granola at the kitchen table. All of a sudden, I was up in the corner of the room looking back at myself, fascinated by how slow I was moving. Since my energy body was vibrating at such a higher level, and the human body moves at such a lower level. It only lasted a minute or so, but I'll never forget it, and I can still clearly see the color of the wallpaper and the tablecloth. One similar finding of science and the findings of religion is that both reveal that matter is not what it seems. Our senses tell us that we live in a solid world of matter, like the desk I'm sitting at here in the studio. But put any solid object under an electron microscope, and you'll see millions of atoms moving at a very fast rate. And they're held together by an invisible force, so that on the outside, the object looks to us like a desk, or a table, or a chair. Matter is an illusion made of vibrating energy. And that leads to the most exciting thing that's been discovered in my lifetime, the Higgs boson. Selby touches on the Higgs, but that discovery has such a great story behind it. I encourage you to Google it and enjoy the journey of scientists around the globe as they look for this elusive boson, an energy that pulls atoms together to create particles and mass. The stories are just fun to read, just fun. And our senses also try to fool us. Our eyes detect only visible light, a very tiny portion of the electromagnetic spectrum that includes radio waves, X-rays, infrared, none of which we can perceive. Our ears detect sounds that are calculated in the Hertz range known as HZ, which is very small. Our ears detect sounds that vibrate in the 20,000 Hertz range. But sounds can vibrate at frequencies well beyond that. In fact, a bat can detect sounds as high as 200,000 Hertz. The point is that everything is just vibrating energy. Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung even had an out-of-body near-death experience while he was in a hospital, and he experienced profound freedom and ecstasy. But he found it impossible to convey to anyone the beauty or the intensity of his emotions during those visions. He felt that this life is only a segment of a three-dimensional universe. In his research of near-death and transcendent experiences, Selby found that there were consistent descriptions of the heavens or astral regions that were glowing, and they were consistently described as so beautiful, very, very hard to describe. And it surpassed the finer versions of the world we know. He concluded that the reality of heaven is far more subtle, flexible, and mutable than our physical existence, and much more real than our physical world. We find this in the Bible verse John 14:2. My Father's house has many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you so. For I go to prepare a place for you. And I often use that verse at memorials, that there are so many places where we will go in eternity. Another profound discovery during my lifetime is about our genes. Geneticists were astonished to learn that newly awakened genetic traits can be passed down from one generation to the next, and that there aren't enough protein-producing genes in our body to produce the 20 million proteins that we know our body does produce. So in sequencing of the Human Genome Project, it was shown that we humans only have 20 to 25,000 protein-producing genes. In order for this to prove out, the actual expression of one particular gene can vary enormously, and every protein-producing gene is able to produce many different proteins. From all the studies, scientists now know that our environmental, behavioral, mental, and emotional changes can turn on thousands of genes once considered permanently dormant, or we thought they were turned off and once considered permanently active. There's no inevitable, pre-programmed, hard-coded destiny of our genes. It's the outside influences, including our behaviors and even our thoughts and feelings, that can substantially alter gene activation and gene expression. And thus we have the emerging field of quantum biology, the study of non-local quantum events in living systems. It's a very exciting time to be alive as a scientist. One common element in all of these is intelligent consciousness. Intelligent consciousness describes how and why our bodies work, what happens in a near-death experience, and if string theory is the basic principle of the universe, now what? From local, non-local intelligent consciousness comes the information that created and continues to create the universe. Our own intelligent consciousness creates our own small part of what we think of as our physical body. And the conclusion is that our thoughts are that powerful. They continuously, moment by moment, contribute to our life experience. We don't see our appearance and physical health fluctuating with every conscious thought, because the thoughts that determine our appearance and physical health are deep in our subconscious mind, as unquestionably held convictions that are difficult to change. So thank you, Joseph Salby, for sharing the latest in what you call the physics of God. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and a team of volunteers who keep everything organized and running well. You're invited to support this amazing group by sending a donation, heck, even $5 helps, to KKRN, P.O. Box 188, Round Mountain, California, 96805. Or look for the donate button on the website. We also love donations of cars, trucks, boats, or motorcycles through careasy.org. And if you have questions, give us a call. 1-855-500-7433. The second book today is The Language of God by Dr. Francis S. Collins. So who is Dr. Collins? He's one of the world's leading scientists whose career has been focused on the study of DNA, the code of life. In this book, he also explains his own journey from atheism to faith, and then takes the reader for a stunning tour of modern science to show how physics, chemistry, and biology can all fit together with a belief in a higher power. After college, Collins entered a PhD program in physical chemistry at Yale, and he became immersed in quantum mechanics. He then broadened his horizons in mathematics, biochemistry, and life sciences to understand the principles of DNA, RNA, and proteins, and at one point he led the Human Genome Project. During this time, he studied the works of C.S. Lewis and was deeply moved by his book, Mere Christianity, and the idea of there being a moral law, a law of right behavior. An example of a moral law is altruism, the energy force that calls us to help others, even if we receive nothing in return. He wondered about the quote from Lewis and concluded that the only way altruism could be expected to show itself would be if it's already within us, like an influence trying to get us to behave in a certain way. As a scientist, Collins was stunned by this logic that hiding in his own heart could be a moral law, and he wanted to know, where did it come from? If there was a higher power that created it, was it desiring some kind of relationship with human beings, so it instilled this special gift of altruism in each of us? He wondered if that is part of its nature. All of a sudden, agnosticism seemed like the great cop-out, and having faith seemed more rational than ever before. He found himself investigating the possibility of a spiritual worldview, including the existence of a higher power that most people call God, but personally, I call it infinite intelligence. At the beginning of the 20th century, most scientists assumed we live in a universe with no beginning and no end. This created certain physical paradoxes, such as how the universe managed to remain stable without collapsing upon itself due to the force of gravity. Information came from Edwin Hubble in 1929 in his famous set of experiences with his telescope and radar machines. He studied the rate at which neighboring galaxies were receding from our own. Everywhere he looked, the light reflecting in the galaxies suggested that they were receding from ours. The farthest away they were, the faster they were receding. This suggested that at one point in time, there was one infinitely dense, dimensionless point of pure energy that exploded about 14 billion years ago. There's compelling evidence for this Big Bang theory, since a ratio of certain chemical elements are consistently found throughout the universe. But that the universe might have been created by a higher power out of nothing was a real challenge for scientists. In his book, God and Astronomers, astrophysicist Robert Jastrow described it this way. I love this. At this moment, it seems as though science will never be able to raise the curtain on the mystery of creation. For the scientist who has lived by the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He's about to conquer the highest peak. As he pulls himself over the final rock, he's greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. Dr. Collins finally had to agree. The Big Bang cried out for a divine explanation. It forced the conclusion that nature had a defining beginning. He couldn't see how nature could have created itself. Only a supernatural force that is outside of space and time could have done that. But what about the rest of creation? When our own planet Earth came into existence 10 billion years after the Big Bang? Many scientists today see this as a theological issue. If you know of Stephen Hawking, the English theoretical physicist who synthesized the theories of quantum mechanics into general relativity, he once said, "The odds against a universe like ours emerging out of something like the Big Bang are enormous. I think there are clearly religious implications." And in his book that I dearly love, A Brief History of Time, he wrote, "It would be very difficult to explain why the universe should have begun in just this way, except as the act of a God who intended to create beings like us." Don't you feel special? You know, it's fascinating to find that our universe is uniquely tuned in to give rise to humans. Hawking felt that there are three possibilities for this. One, there may be an infinite number of universes, but we exist only in the one where all physical properties work together to permit us to live and have a consciousness. Or two, there's only one universe. This is it, and it just happens to have all the right characteristics to give rise to intelligent life. Or three, there's only one universe, and it reflects the action of the one who created it in the first place to make intelligent life possible. Regardless, The point is that we are no accident. Back to Collins. In the early 80s, he published a paper on human genetics that was based on DNA sequencing in his search for a cure for sickle cell anemia. Typical DNA sequences are expressed in alphabetical letters like A, L, U, which happens to occur in over a million sequences in human beings. Collins was studying the production of just one protein found in red blood cells of a human fetus in utero. This protein helps babies begin to breathe with their own lungs as they're born, and as they grow, the protein turns itself off. He was studying a family in Jamaica where that protein did not turn itself off. He thought if he could identify how to get this protein to appear in substantial quantities in adults, he believed that it had the potential for reducing the ravages of sickle cell anemia. Well, 18 months later, he finally found in the DNA sequence a G instead of a C above one of the genes that triggered the protein production. After this discovery, scientists discussed the possibility of determining the DNA sequence of the entire human genome, estimated to be about 3 billion base pairs in length. They believed this could result in a vast instruction book and enable scientists to create a parts list for human biology with clues to healing a long list of diseases. And if you love biology, Collins' description of how this team found the one letter in the DNA code that caused cystic fibrosis is fascinating reading. And for non-scientists, I'll give you the simple version. Collins described the challenge of their hunt like this. We were looking for a single burned-out light bulb in the basement of a house somewhere in the United States. Get that? The strategy was a house-to-house search, light bulb by light bulb. They didn't even have a map of the territory, no street maps, no blueprints of buildings, and no inventory of light bulbs. He said the work was brutal. The team developed a method they call chromosome jumping that allowed them to move across the 2 million base pair targets, like leaping ahead on a pogo stick. In the end, it was a deletion of just 3 letters of the DNA code in the protein part of an unknown gene that was the cause of virtually all cases of cystic fibrosis. Congratulations. Thank goodness. By the late 90s, there were 20 public genome centers in 6 countries running around the clock. And by April 2003, they announced the completion of all of the goals of the Human Genome Project. For Collins, uncovering the human genome sequence held spiritual significance. He saw the code written in a language by which God spoke life into being. There were surprises from the first reading of the human genome. They expected to find at least 100,000 genes to code for protein, but humans only have about 20,000. Interesting that the gene counts for other organisms such as worms and flies and simple plants are in the same 20,000 range. Well, further observation showed that gene count wasn't the whole story. Our human complexity arises from the way the instruction packets in our genes are used. And the DNA level, 99% of all humans are identical, and yet we're all different. Collins gets into the contentious area between the theory of evolution and faith in God. In chapter 7, he offers us 4 options. Option number 1, atheism and agnosticism. And he concludes that science cannot be used to justify discounting the great monotheistic religions of the world, which rest upon centuries of history, moral philosophy, and the powerful evidence provided by human altruism. But that leaves science with a challenge. If the existence of God is true, actually true, and if certain scientific conclusions about the natural world are also true, not just fashionable, then they cannot contradict each other. A fully harmonious synthesis must be possible. And here is where the current scientific battle continues to rage. Option number two is creationism, where faith trumps science. It implies the general perspective of one who argues for the existence of a God who was directly involved in the creation of the universe, but as well the literal reading of Genesis 1 and 2 and the 6 days of creation for a universe that would be less than 10,000 years old. Option 3, intelligent design. Now, this burst on the scene in 1991, and it places a major focus on the perceived failings of evolutionary theory to account for the stunning complexity of life. Intelligent design rests on these propositions: that evolution promotes an atheistic worldview and must be resisted by believers in God, that evolution is fundamentally flawed since it cannot account for the intricate complexity of nature. Therefore, there must be an intelligent designer involved somehow who stepped in to provide the necessary components during the course of evolution. Collins chose another path he calls option four, theistic evolution. And it has six premises that are found on page 200, so you can read that. And he feels these are entirely plausible, intellectually satisfying, and logically consistent. And what emerged for Collins is a God who is not limited in space or time, that created the universe and established natural laws that govern it, that chose to populate this otherwise sterile universe with living creatures. Theistic evolution believes that the elegant mechanism of evolution created microbes, plants, animals of all sorts, and chose the same mechanism to give rise to special creatures who would have intelligence, a knowledge of right and wrong, free will, and a desire to seek fellowship with him. And these creatures would ultimately choose to disobey the moral law. For Collins, it makes it possible for the scientist to be a believer. One is then intellectually fulfilled and spiritually alive, but also honoring God and using the tools of science to uncover some of the awesome mysteries of his creation. Collins recounts a time when he was working in a small hospital in Nigeria, and as a young farmer was brought in who had progressive weakness and massive swellings in his legs. And taking his pulse, he started to note that with every breath, the patient's pulse stopped or paused. This indicated that the young man had accumulated a large amount of fluid in the pericardial sac around his heart, threatening to choke off his circulation and take his life. Well, Collins talked to him about doing an aspiration, and the young man agreed, and he did it, and within hours he greatly improved. Well, the next morning, Collins approached the man and noticed that he was reading a Bible. Here was a young man whose culture, experience, and ancestry were so different. But the first words out of this young man's mouth were, "I get the sense that you're wondering why you came here. And I have an answer. You came here for one reason. You came here to save me." With those few simple words, Dr. Collins' grandiose dreams of being the great white doctor put him to shame. And he bonded so well with this young man. And he remembered C.S. Lewis called this agape love, a love that seeks no recompense, the sweetest joy that one can experience. And for Collins, he felt it must have been instilled in all of us by a higher power, and he was so humbled. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about scientists who have found reason for and comforting unifying quantum physics with a higher power, so you can use it for good in your life and the lives of everyone you love. And for those you don't love, why not use it for their good anyway? It's another small step in bringing peace to the world. May peace be with you. Mm-hmm.